Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Agency Toolkit Podcast. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin, and I have Todd Jamieson here with me today, who is the founder of Envision Up. And Envision Up is a full-service agency located in Ottawa, Canada. So really excited to have Todd here with us today to learn. So yeah, I can learn more about his story of starting his agency, how he continues to grow it, and some challenges that he's had to overcome along the way. So thanks so much for joining me today, Todd.
Awesome. Thanks, Julia. And thanks so much for having me today. I just want to say I love the Canadian flavor of your podcast. It's so like, it's so nice to have an actual, you know, Canadian, I don't know if it's all Canadian owners that you have on here, but a lot of Canadian content, which is awesome.
Yeah.
A lot of podcasts, and it's always, you know, like, there's a lot of similarities obviously with the US and Canada, but you know, they always seem to get, you know, different stuff for Google, or there'll be different services that they have that we don't have and stuff like that. So it's really nice to get that, you know, like in a Canadian sort of feel to it, and learn more what other Canadian agencies are doing. So I'm a big fan of the podcast and listened to a bunch of them already. So I'm really excited to be here today to talk about my story.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Todd. So, you know, you're already familiar with the flow of the podcast. So to get started, I'd love to know, you know, what really motivates or inspires you as an agency owner?
Yeah. So this is a tough question. So I've been an entrepreneur since, say 1996. So a while now. You know, the agency is my primary, you know, the primary entrepreneurial thing that I work on right now. But, you know, for me, you know, what gets me, you know, what excites me about being an agency owner and just an entrepreneur in general is really just helping and serving and helping, I guess, business owners and being their trusted advisor. So it's just like there's so much change right now. You know, a lot of these guys are having these messages that are coming in from all these different angles and stuff, and they don't know who to trust. You know, being that trusted advisor, obviously getting things done and doing work for them as well, but just being that trusted advisor, it really, you know, it helps. It's kind of like my why a little bit, you know. It's just being that, you know, that being able to serve and help them, really,
yeah,
you know, get the purpose, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I can completely relate to that 100%. It's so rewarding at the end of the day when you're able to just make an impact in, you know, that they're able to put, these families are able to put food on their table and hire, yeah, more employees and help grow local economies. And you're able to, you know, just help with a piece of growing their business.
Yeah. And just, and even at times, you know, they might read something and think something is some way, right? And it's incorrect information or something that might have a big impact on their business. And, you know, you're able to come in there as a trusted advisor and help steer them in the right direction. So that's what gets me up and nice. Really is really rewarding, I think, about the you know, being an agency owner.
Awesome. So Todd, I'd love to learn about your story of, you know, why you decided to start Envision Up, you know, how you got into digital marketing, and then what that story is that led you to starting your agency.
Sure. So the story started in 1999. So many, many, many years ago. So I'm gonna paint a picture for you of 1999, because it's funny, because I was just thinking back about, you know, how things were back then. So like, this is, you know, 1999. So we're on, were on dial-up, like most people, and most businesses didn't even have internet. And so the few that did were on dial-up, or, you know, if you had some like a DSL kind of thing, but it was sort of high speed, but not really. You know, Google didn't exist. You know, Yahoo and Google were just starting. Yahoo and AltaVista were how people search, you know, the web. Netscape, Internet Explorer were the main browsers, and, you know, WordPress didn't exist. Social media didn't exist. None of these things existed, right? So we're literally building websites in HTML, and so we're using, you know, Dreamweaver or just hand coding HTML websites. And so we got into this business. I started as a, you know, loan, hired a couple of people, and then we started building websites. And so I looked at this. And I said, like, there's got to be a better way. Like, this is taking forever. You know, like doing things that, you know, today we take for granted in WordPress that would take a minute to do, you know, might take a day. You know, and it's just I was like, there must be a better way. So. So I talked to my developers, and I came out, I didn't know how to do it, but I said, you know, hey, why don't we like hook a database up to a website and like try to like put the information in the database, and then the website connects to the database, and then information comes out and blah, blah, blah. And basically, you know, I invented a CMS, we called it the web panel. And so this is this is way before WordPress even existed. And WordPress came out in 2003. So this is 2000, you know, we got grant money from the government, you know, built this tool, and we're selling this web panel solution, which is, you know, like a kind of a primitive CMS. And then we were able to get funding from a third party financer that would basically allow people to lease their website for, you know, 100 to, you know, 300 bucks a month or whatever it was, right? So we took this thing that, you know, for a lot of businesses was too expensive, and turned it into just like something that was actually affordable. And so we brought on a lot of clients and grew the company until 2005. And that was our first fork in the road. So the first fork in the road was open source. So WordPress comes out, Drupal comes out, Joomla, there's this other tool called Embraco. And these are all these open source CMSs that basically people can get for free. So now we have like, And they're good. Like, they're not just like, like, it's not just like this crappy thing. I'm like, okay, this is not good. So we have like, you know, our tool that we invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in, and then we're competing against in this open source tool that's free. Right. And so we're like, do we try to compete? You know, what do we do? You know, do we try to compete? Do we try to, you know, borrow money and invest into our tool, and so that we can compete against these other tools? Or do we like, you know, just jump on the ship? And we decided to jump on the open source, you know, path and go that route. And it was obviously a very good decision. And so we kind of let our web panel thing slowly die. We had a few customers, you know, still run on it. We actually, you know, even until 2012, there's people still running on it. But we slowly let this thing die. And it was a pretty big crossroad. Like, you know, it's like walking. You created this software, it's your baby, you know, and you're pretty proud of it, and you have all these people on it, and then you basically have to walk away from it, you know.
That would be tough.
Yeah. And there's no market for, you know, you can't sell it really. You know, there's proprietary stuff there, but it's not like, you know, someone's gonna take it over and build, you know, something, because there already is a better solution that's out there, right? So that was a big challenge. So that came in 2005. So then we did this, we had a fork there. So we continued to build websites on the WordPress platform, built, you know, anything in, you know, any industry, like you name it, anybody, you know, the money, you have a pulse, you know, within reason, you know, we'll build you a website. We have, you know, built what e-commerce solutions, web applications, like just everything and anything you can imagine. And that was sort of our big thing. And then in 2012, or just before 2012, one of my clients came to me and said, hey, there's someone wants to buy your company. And so he came to us, and you know, we went through back and forth, and we were able to sell the company. And so we sold, you know, the web design company in 2012. you know, it was an experience, and I won't go into too many details. So it wasn't not a good experience.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it didn't work out how I exactly wanted it to, but we were able to sell it, and we kind of moved on. We'll just say that.
Right.
And at the same time, my father was pretty ill. I had a six-year-old and 4-year-old, I'm like, holy crap, I'm thinking like I should be in Tahiti or something right now. And now I'm worrying about what do I do next with my business, so that I can bring in revenue for my family. You know what I mean? So we're at this big crossroad. Took a little bit of time to reflect, and I said, okay, I'm ready for the next adventure, and I'm going to start a digital agency. And so that's basically when, Envision came up. And so, there's a lot of lessons that came up, along the way. And, mm-hmm. The first thing was, project-based work was hell. It was just like you would have to wait for payments. It was really stressful on cash flow. We're waiting for clients to pay us, or waiting for clients to deliver assets, like digital assets, like the copy and all that kind of stuff. And then so there's this big gap. We have this plan that we want to do, but we have this big gap, and then we can't finish the website until they give us that final, images and copy and all that kind of stuff.
What you're waiting on.
Yeah. So we have this big sort of cash flow crunch, right? Where it was really stressful. So I was like, the model, I have to have a recurring revenue model so there's predictable cash flow so that I can grow the business. So that was like the first checkbox. Second thing was, we got to try to be as technology agnostic as possible, so that we don't just say we only do this. Only use this technology. We have to be open-minded to, because mm-hmm. things were changing, we'd already seen so much change in the past, and with the social media was starting to really take off at that time, and the Google AdWords these things were starting, and there's so much change, right? So we mm-hmm. We had to be technology agnostic, and then we needed our team to not work in silos. So the idea, what we saw in the past was like we had designers that would do their designer stuff, and then the developers would do their developer stuff, but then the developer and the designers really wouldn't talk, and they would mm-hmm. always, like the creative people and the programming minded people, they would kind of butt heads, and they wouldn't like each other and all that kind of stuff, and they wouldn't even take an opportunity to understand, the other side or anything like that. So I came across this thing called the T-shaped marker. I don't know if you've heard of it before, but it's super, it's a pretty interesting concept, I guess. And so basically it's like a T. So across the top is all of the different types of marketing activities, I guess, so like social, SEO, blah, blah, blah. And then, you have something like say social, and then you go do a deep dive on social, and that's the downward of the T, the line downward. And so you go deep into that. So the expectation is that, a T-shaped marketer is someone that, they have expertise in one area, like deep expertise, but working knowledge across all channels. Do you know what I'm saying?
I love that. So
the idea is like, so now, we have, and this is what happens with our team. Like we'll have meetings, and we'll be sharing knowledge, and everybody's there. It's not just like, we're not sharing social media like new. So the developer is aware of, TikTok, and whatever, and different new developments that are coming out, and they have a working knowledge. They're not like experts. They're not doing social media or anything like that, but they have enough knowledge about it so that, if they come across stuff or if they have information they want to share, they can share it. And it's just as a team, we just understand that these are just tools and these are technologies that we all need to know as part of a digital agency. Do you know what I'm saying?
That's so important.
Yeah. So that was sort of the third thing, I guess, or whatever we're at now. And then the last thing was a niche. And so we looked at all our niches and the ones that we enjoyed working with. And this is just like a more of a selfish thing, like what I like working with and I get most joy out of it. And the home services space was what we liked the most. So we really feel that we can, you know, add a lot of value there. So, and then more specifically, sort of like the 2 to 20 million range, that's the, you know, that's the, you know, people that are big enough that they can, they want to outsource, but not so big that they're going to create their own marketing team internally. You know what I mean? So they're going
to. Right. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
So that was basically the model. And, you know, we started it, like a lot of the other agencies, it seems like, you know, that we have like these existing relationships that we leverage. So we were very fortunate to, for Envision Up to leverage that. But back in the day, it was not like that at all. back in 1999. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So talk a little bit about what it was like bringing on those first few clients and then how that has evolved, how your lead gen strategy has evolved over the years.
Yeah. So when we first started, so this is 1999, 2000 technology, you know, we didn't have the tools, you know, the outreach tools that we have today. It was, as a market, you know, like the product, like web design, it was in the infancy, you know, there wasn't the demand that there is now. So, you know, smaller market and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of education that had to be done. So what I did at the time, so I was like 25, 24 or something like this. And I was like hiring people sometimes twice my age. It's kind of weird, but, I got these old, you know, these guys that worked in radio and newspaper, and I had two salespeople, and they were basically doing old school cold calling. So they would literally, the yellow pages was a Rolodex. Whoever had the biggest ad was the best prospects. And
that's so interesting.
They would just literally just open up the yellow pages, and they're like, yeah, let's call this company. And so it's funny to think about it now, because it's like, it's so like, I don't know, really old school, right?
It's actually, I just had a conversation the other day about age discrimination, and it was a guest talking about how he wish he had known when he was in his early 20s that was a thing, and that it's really hard speaking with, you know, a CEO of a company who's in his 50s or 60s. Right. So he wish he had hired someone for sales who was older, who could, you know, they were just more on that same level. So that's really interesting that that's how you started off.
Yeah. And I didn't want to do it either. Like for me, it's not my personality. I find it really tough to get on the phone to, you know, doing cold calls and stuff like that. So they're just used to it, and they like the challenge. They love talking to people and stuff like that. It wasn't a big deal, but we brought in like tons of customers like that. And in any, like many, many different industries. And then basically what happened was every 3 to 5 years, people will get redesigns, right? So it just like, so we would continue to bring in customers, but then every 3 years, you know, our client, like we would get new websites like auto renewed, right? So that was basically the strategy. And then around 2010, we just stopped doing the cold calling, and we just went right into referral based stuff. And we had referral based, like, clients would refer us customers or you know, people who were new stuff. And then we had a couple of partnerships. Like we had a few partnerships with marketing agencies and print companies and stuff like that, and who, awesome. You know, were sort of close. They're like, industries were pretty close, you know, and they wanted to have a trusted partner. And so, you know, just we, you know, leads would come in that way as well.
Very cool.
Yeah. And so fast forward to today, you know, so the big thing about, you know, the recurring model is, you know, we really have a lot of, like we have a very low attrition rate, you know, so our clients, we keep a lot of our clients, they don't leave generally. So there's, you know, there's not the same demands, I guess, that you would have when you have a project-based business model, bring a new business, you know, so we have a lot of repeat business. And then it's, our model is very similar, where we have old customers coming in every 3 years, you know, needing a new website. And then we have a few, you know, we have some partnerships and stuff like that, but we generally don't do cold calls, we don't do them at all. Yep. We don't advertise, so there's not, you know, as far as outbound stuff, we're not, you know, we'll do articles and on, you know, blog posts and stuff like that. So we'll get stuff through SEO and, referrals and, from satisfied customers or referring us to another business and things like that. But it's, the direct, you know, those kind of strategies, we're not doing a lot of that. We're not doing any of that stuff. And it's just, we've been very fortunate, I guess. And I think it's a how we do things, you know, it's like we care about our customers a lot and the product is really good. And, you know, we target industries that, you know, are looking for that trusted partner and not looking to, you know, to find a new, you know, that are like these high growth, you know, like a crypto, you know, company or a IT company or something like that, you know, something that's like, they're always changing and, you know, firing their marketing companies every 6 months if they don't deliver and stuff like that. So we're picking sort of companies that we think we're a good fit for.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And so, I know you mentioned that you've had, you know, your clients for a really long time, your churn rate is pretty low, which is amazing. Yeah. So what do you attribute that to? Like, I know you mentioned that you guys, you know, you genuinely really care about your clients. Yeah. Is there any, you know, processes that you've put in place that you think have been effective in just helping keep clients happy along the way?
Yeah. So that's a good question. So we, you know, for our team, so something that I think we're pretty, it's not common, we've had a support, like we've had basically a customer support and department as part of ingrained into our business since day one. So you call, like we answer our phone, like it sounds weird, but we actually answer our phone, like a live person, not a phone tree. So someone answers the phone during business hours. We have our own help desk system as well. So we used to, most people used to call. And then I don't know when, you know, a few years ago when people are more used to help desk systems, now people are putting support tickets because they can get a tracking number and all that kind of stuff. But, you know,
interesting. That's very unique.
Yeah. Yeah. So we do that. Like we offer hosting as well and email hosting and web hostings as part of our offering. So people for that use it. And then people, after they get a website, they want some upgrades done to it or things like that. And so that's the first thing. And so, and then we're pretty responsive, like very responsive. So, I mean, the first thing is people know during business hours, they can call us and, you know, if they need to, they can call us and someone's going to answer the phone. And it's not just like an order taker person. It's like someone who's actually going to do something, you know what I mean? So, person who answers the phone right now, Scott, like he's gonna try to fix it. Like he's gonna, you know, most likely fix your problem for you live on the phone for you. You know what I mean? So that's cool. So that's the first thing. And then obviously like the help desk so that they have, you know, they can follow it and all that kind of stuff. And so if it's at night, you know, and there's an issue, they can email and they know that someone's gonna respond and the next day.
Do they have access to that help desk? Or is that more for internal purposes for your team?
No, they do. They do.
They do.
All clients do. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's cool.
It's a support. It's just, I don't know. It's like, it's one of our core values. It's like, think like a client. It's like, if I was doing business with another company and I bought invested all this money, I want them to respond to me. You know what I mean? It's like super basic, old school.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, but you know, you don't get that. And, you know, especially, you know, post COVID, it's even worse. Right. So, for us, that's a big part. And so it's just, it's a service thing doing, you know, my thought is, you know, people like it and, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of digital agencies, you know, you can test, you know, if the grass is greener on the other side, but, you know, if you're getting really good support, you're getting results, you know, it's kind of risky, right? To take that, you know, to explore that. Right. And, a lot of times you're not gonna, you know, if something's down, you know, on a Friday, it's 8 PM or something like that, you know, most companies would not they'll just ignore you, right? So that's the first thing. Second thing is, I think we're just transparent, and genuinely care about our businesses, the clients that we work with, and it's, everyone, all the people that we hire, they're just good people, in my opinion, and, like what they do, they're passionate about what they do. They're knowledgeable, so that's a reason. And then, I didn't mention this, but, we're now fully remote. We were in Ottawa. I'm in Ottawa right now, but, half our staff works outside of Ottawa. So we have people working in Alberta and Montreal, and then so the people are in Ottawa, but everyone, we're all remote. We, talk through Google Meet, Google Chat all day long on video. It's like we're there, but so we've been fortunate enough to, it helps us get better staff, in my opinion. So we're not limited to just the Ottawa region. So it's, if somebody's, I know like you're in Muskoka area, if someone lives in Brockville or Newfoundland, who cares, right? Like, it doesn't matter as long as their internet connection
opens up the talent pool.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so we have, we have some people, in Edmonton, Calgary, Montreal, it's that never would have, if we didn't open our mind to that, we would never have been able to hire them. So that's been a good thing. And they bring different perspectives too, right? So it's kind of, like you have an Ottawa person, they're on the phone and like, oh, how's it going? Oh, it's minus 45 here in Edmonton today, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And they're having this conversation, and it's just interesting to them because they're like, they can, this different perspective and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of fun. I love the new, this wouldn't happen. This wasn't doable. Like 5 years ago, you know what I mean? Like that, with all the technology that's come post COVID, I would say is really opened up.
Yeah.
Opportunities, right? So it's
so as soon as COVID hit, that's basically when you guys started to go remote. Is that right?
Yeah, we were set up in 2019. So so I had this plan to go remote first. So it was always, we're in Ottawa. Yeah, so we're in Ottawa. So the cost of labor is more expensive in Ottawa just because of the government and it's just same thing as like Toronto and Vancouver and all these, bigger cities and stuff like that. It's more expensive, right? Because the cost of living and stuff like that. So it was always part of my plan to go fully remote, or go more remote, I guess. And so we were setting up our systems to be remote first, and we started in 2019, and then and they're just pretty much ready to go. And then COVID hit, and we're like, okay, take your laptops, work from home. And everyone just left and never came back.
That's amazing that you guys had all those processes already in place. It was definitely a time where a lot of people were kind of panicking.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We're very lucky, it's people had laptops, which was just, it was just a thing, that we had, and I know some other businesses, a lot of people had desktops taking these huge towers home and stuff is hilarious. But it worked out well for us. And we weren't even down at all. Like, it was literally like they left that day and everyone just logged in the morning. And it was just like normal.
Interesting.
It was pretty good. It worked out well for us. Yeah.
Nice. And then, so I'd love to know, obviously COVID is a huge challenge that a lot of agencies had to overcome. What would you say has been the biggest challenge that you've had to overcome as you've grown in Vision Up?
So the biggest challenge was, there's one, I think the biggest challenge was actually related to this remote. So it was, do we go all in or not? And so we had an office, in Ottawa. And so I'd been renting an office since 1999. Like, it's different offices, but it's, I've always had an office, you know, with staff and so forth. Right. And, you know, so something like, I work from home from time to time, but pretty much go to the office, you know, at least 4 days a week. Right. So that was, just part of me, right? That was part of it as a business owner. I have my office and, you know, it's like, oh, where's your office? This is my office and blah, blah, blah. Right. So, we can entertain clients there and all that kind of stuff. And so, after COVID hit, you know, we shut down because of, you know, like everyone had to shut down, and then we're allowed to open up again. And, I went into the office and then no one else wanted to go in the office. So they're like, we really like this. And I was like, all right, fine, whatever. So I would go in, and I literally went in there for a year and a half by myself, pretty much every day. And then we'd have, you know, I'd force people to come in, you know, the odd time and say, hey guys, we got to have a strategy meeting. And, you know, but that'd be like maybe once a month, if that. And then we had clients who usually were meeting in person. Only one decided in that time period to come to the office. That's it. And so we never, you know, so I'm just like, okay, well, that doesn't make sense. You know, like they still don't want, you know, clients don't even care either. So I was like, I'm like, okay, do I do this? And I just said, let's do it. So I made a decision. Luckily the lease terms allowed for me to do this. And so I contacted the landlord and I said, okay, September 1st, like this past September, I'm shutting it down. And we just basically went 100% remote. And,
interesting.
And I still have an office, like a meeting space office that I can go to. So I go there once a month, just to get out of the house, but, and I have a meeting space that I can use whenever I want, but pretty much, we went full remote, and it's, you know, it's good savings, right? Like, you save a lot of money. You can reallocate stuff on other things, and it's, so far it's worked out. It's worked out pretty good. But it's, that was a big change. That was like, you know, I don't know why. It's ingrained in, you know, it's like, that's what you have, right? Businesses have offices, right? And
exactly. Now, at least what's nice is, you know, if you've made that commitment to just operate completely remote, you know, there are a lot of these places in most major cities and towns where you can just rent office space like on an as needed basis. You know, it's got a desk or a conference table or whatever you need, Wi-Fi. So, I mean, those are perfect, right? If you need to have a meeting, just rent one of those. And they're usually very nice spaces.
Yeah. Exactly. And I did the research, and there's just so many, like you said, like the one that we're part of, they have partners in different cities and stuff like that. So we can use them, you know, different locations and stuff like that. So you know what to expect, right? You know, you can make a meeting there and you know it's going to be a nice place and stuff like
that. Exactly.
It's pretty cool.
Awesome. So where do you see Envision Up in 5 years time?
That's the multi-million dollar question. So that, like, the 5 years thing, so I thought about it, you know, so it's like, you know, if you think in 2017, you know, or just you keep going back, right? And look at changes that happen and just, you know, obviously, like, COVID's COVID, that's different. But, like, if you look at, like, you know, other things like WordPress or some of these things, you could kind of see rumblings of things happen, but people didn't jump on board fully. So you can see, like, the open source movement that dramatically changed, I think, the web building space. You could see, you know, like, I lived through Facebook. So it was like, we had like, I remember, like, vividly, we're in our office in, like, downtown Ottawa, and we had this guy, Tim, and Tim was living in the UK, and he had just moved back to Ottawa, and he's like, hey, Todd, in my university, there's a lot of people are using this thing called Facebook. You should maybe look at this. I'm like, nah, I don't know. I think it's a fad. Like, it's just for university students, blah, 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 you know? And this is 2005, right? And it's just... Yeah. You know, or we had a client that wanted to add, I don't know what year, I think it was 2010 or 11, but they wanted to add crypto, like Bitcoin as a you know, as a payment method, right? And I'm just mm-hmm. like, ah, it's just a fad. And I was like, ah, oh, God, it's like, I gotta get on these things, you know? But So I think like right now, like this AI thing, the open AI, the ChatGPT-3 stuff and 4 in the future, Microsoft is like, there's all this rumblings that Microsoft is gonna start introducing it and making it as part of their search engine. And all that kind of stuff. I don't know exactly how, like, we've been playing around with it a lot. We've used parts of it for to help, like, we don't use it for blog writing or anything like that, but we've used it for, you know, just some like formulas, like Google Sheet formulas and regex stuff and things like that. And then we've used it for just like review responses and stuff, you know, just write a review. That sounds very nice or whatever, you know, and it comes out and I'm like, yeah, that sounds pretty good, you know. And it's not hurting anybody, it's not, you know, you're giving a nice answer to somebody, right? And it's just saving you time, right? So so some really cool things there. I think it's going to change, you know. We actually had a discussion today with our team about it, because we're all just sort of goofing around and trying different things and, you know, seeing, you know, what it can do. And, we had this discussion about, just say if Google or sort of Microsoft integrates this into their search engine, you know, it's going to dramatically change the amount of top of funnel content that people produce, you know, so like how to guides and stuff like blog posts, because basically the chat tool will give you the answers in real time, right? So why would a marketer spend time writing that kind of content and blogs and stuff like that? So it could have a dramatic impact on blog writing and that kind of content that people produce, because the chat is just going to give answers better, right? Than anybody could write. So it's going to change sort of marketing. There's the visual, the audio stuff, you know, the voice print stuff, and where, you know, this AI can take a person's voice and then you could literally, you know, do a video with a voice just by typing stuff in. So it's going to change things dramatically. So I feel like there's, you know, something about AI that, you know, people are going to need. Business owners are going to always, what will never change is business owners are always going to need people to help them market. They're always going to need customers. They're always, you know, they're going to need leads and customers. They're going to need, they're going to need people to work for them. So they're going to have problems finding like employees. And they're all these, like, nothing's going to change there. They're going to all still need those things. It's just how that stuff is given to them is going to change. And so I think
I agree. You know,
possibly companies like us might change and be helping them set up virtual robots, or who knows, you know what I mean? Like these kind of these new sort of things that are going to come out. And we weren't doing social before, right? We weren't doing all the like pay-per-click management. We weren't doing like local service ads is fairly recent, right? So these are all like technologies that, or whatever you want to call them, tactics that have come out. And, you know, marketing and companies need people to do this stuff, right? So, you know, that's the way. So it's not going to really change for us that much, in my opinion. We just have to make sure that we're on top of this, and we're open-minded and we're thinking of the clients and what's going to benefit them most, and just, you know, being ahead of the curve, I guess, as much as we can. So
It's funny because I'm part of this Facebook community called the Admin Bar, and the admin of the group, he came out and he was like, well, I've seen some ChatGPT responses of that people are responding to various things that people are posting in the group, and it's a WordPress community. And he's like, we're just going to keep it pure for as long as we can, like no ChatGPT responses for the time being.
That's funny.
Unless you specify it, but it's definitely changing the landscape like crazy.
Oh, I know. And I like, there's these tools that can detect AI apparently. And I was even doing experiments, dropping them in there, and it doesn't detect it. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's just mind blowing. Yeah, it's mind blowing. And then for, and then for us, like as a business, I think like we're already doing this where like people, it's just that there's so much marketing stuff, right? So it's like, so, you know, a guy that's, you know, we have these, this agency that work with us and they specialize in technology, right? So that's all their clients are technology clients. And then a brother, one of the owner's brothers owns a home services company. He's like, I don't know how to work with these guys, you know? And then he got our name through someone that he knows. And he's like, hey, Todd, can you help us out? You know, can you, you know, do you want to work with this company? Because you know this better, you know? And they just, they know like this other company, they're just like, we're really good at what we do, the technology, marketing technology companies, but I don't have the first idea about these, this, these local SEO and all this other stuff. And so, you know, he interviewed me, we talked and he's like, yeah, you, can you take this over? I'm like, yeah, no problem. So it's, you know, that's all, there's going to be a lot of that kind of stuff where it's like, you know, hyper specialization in an industry and a, in a, you know, just, and you can see the results and stuff like that. And that's, so a lot of that. And then for us, we're in the States a little bit, but we do, we definitely want to expand. It's just a bigger market and there's more opportunity. So, that's sort of, that's where we were going in the next 5 years. But yeah, it's exciting. It's scary. It's exciting. I don't know. It's kind of weird. It's, you know, like, it's like the stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's uncharted territory, but I feel like it's, I mean, if we can overcome a worldwide pandemic, then I feel like we'll adapt to AI. Awesome. Well, Todd, we're ready to move on now to the fast five. So I have five rapid fire questions for you. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
So I have three. I know yes for one. I have three. So I'm going to give you one and then I'll give you the two bonus ones. How about that? So if I was going to pick any book that's made the biggest impact on me, and also I think every entrepreneur should read as like almost like this is the beginning entrepreneur of an entrepreneur career is E-Myth by Michael Gerber. I think it's like I think it's the most powerful book. It's an easy read. Most, especially digital agencies, most are coming from a technician type of role and moving into a business owner role, and it's super super important to change the mindset to working in the business to on the business. So that's for me, like that's like, and I think it's a timeless one. I think it's still relevant today, even though, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, how old, how long ago it was written. The second one for me is on the financial side, and it's a book called Profit First. So it's written by a guy named Mike Michalowicz. So Mike is so, I don't know if you ever heard him, but he's super funny. Really funny guy, has written tons of books for small businesses, is just, you know, really smart, but basically the Profit First is just like, you know, the typical business. And this, I did this at the beginning. I wish I read this earlier. You know, is like revenue minus expenses equals profit equals, which, and profit equals, you know, entrepreneur's salary, right? And, you know, it's like you go up and down. It's like, this is what you make, you know, you, and it's whatever's left over, you get the scraps kind of thing. Right. And it's no way to live, obviously. So he basically flips it around. He says, figure out how much profit you need to make, then like work backwards, basically. So think of profit first. Yeah. So it's a really good book, and he's got some interesting tactics and things there, and even strategies to, you know, opening up multiple bank accounts to, you know, to basically make sure that you don't steal money from yourself kind of thing. So it's pretty neat. And then the last one is Getting Things Done by David Allen. It's called The GTD. And this is like it's had a big impact on me. And it's a really good book about just helping you manage what to work on first. And, you know, most people will see a to-do list, but it's not actually a to-do list. It's a project list. And so each to-do really has a next action, and you should be looking at it, like change your perspective of how you look at things. And so most people never get anything done because they got a list of projects that they've listed out, not a list of tasks, if you know what I mean.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a really, but he's got this interesting process and it's pretty neat. So those are my
your three recommendations.
Yes.
All right. And what does your morning routine look like?
So my morning routine is, I'm a morning person. So generally I'm up at about 5:30 in the morning. I'm just getting over the flu, pretty bad flu. And so normally I work out at least three times a week, but I'm sort of taking a break on that for a bit. But and then I just work on my what I have to do for the day till 8 a.m. So I turn my phone 100% focus mode. So there's like no texts, no emails, no nothing. Don't check my email. So that those first 2 hours basically is just like focus time before the rest of the world gets up, essentially. And then between 8 and 9, I'll respond to my emails. I'm like, I don't know many people like me, but I do inbox zero. So literally every day I bring my inbox down to zero. So so in the morning, like I don't use my email list as a project management tool. I use a different tool for that. So, So I bring my inbox down to zero. And that just gives me, you know, allows me to focus and, you know, what's important and stuff like that for the day. And then 9 a.m. happens. And
and then you see wherever it takes you from there.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But, yeah, so that's my typical day.
Good, good. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
You know, I don't. And I read a lot. I've read a lot of CEO, like I read, you know, books from different CEOs and stuff like that. And I find most of the CEOs that have written books are, you know, publicly traded companies, you know, and their stories are just, they're not as relatable, I guess, for me, because it's just like, I'm not, you know, so it's, I don't, you know, there's some interesting things and definitely some CEOs that, you know, I've got some value out of. But what, you know, really for me, I'm part of this group called Tech. So it's like they have chapters all around the world, but you know, our group in Ottawa, you know, there's 15 CEOs. We meet once a month, and most of these guys are, most of the people in my group are larger than me. And you know, just the information and stuff I collect from them honestly is just so valuable. Like these peer groups or whatever you want to call them, like it's super powerful. And the lessons that I learned from this is like way more than anything I could ever read in a book. So, so that's amazing. That's really my, you know, that's how I get, you know, CEO, like other CEO information and stuff like that.
Right. Okay. Perfect. And what is your favorite online tool?
So we use tons of tools. So that's a big, you know, like most, I think most agencies are, you know, use lots as well. The one that I like the most, I guess, and is Zapier. And I just like the automation and the ability of to basically join things together that normally wouldn't communicate together, and the ability, you know, to just you know, to save time and be more productive and stuff like that. So yeah. I really like Zapier a lot, and there's, you know, they're continually adding there's new ways to integrate. There's just like I haven't even explored all of it, but there's lots of really neat ways that you can do things and automate stuff. And so that's cool for me. It's, I just love saving time and you know, having predictability and stuff like that. And, you know, if we don't have to spend money on having a staff, you know, do something manual and using a tool like that, it's a big part. And it's, and we also, you know, when we're looking at other tools that we might take on to use this, most of the time we look to see if they do have a, you know, a connection. It's one of those things that we look at so that everything can talk to each other and stuff like that.
Yeah. Very cool. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
So For me, people, like, you know, we're in a people, we produce things. Our teams are really important to us. You know, we're 10 people. We're not a huge team. You know, so having the right, like, you know, seats on the bus or whatever, you know, is really important. So, you know, if one of the things that, you know, is hard, definitely hard, that I'm getting better at, but at the beginning I was really bad at it, is just, you know, hiring slow and firing fast. And so it's just, you know, finding, you know, if it's not working out, you know, say you make a mistake and you bring in the wrong person, you know, it's best for everybody, you know, to move on. And that's, it's a hard, it's super hard. And, you know, you don't want to be mean to anybody and all that stuff, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, there's always relief afterwards. I feel good about the decision afterwards and so forth. And it's something that, you know, I think is important, for everybody, you know, even the person that's being let go, like it's better for them. Like if they're not, you know, they know, right. Most of the time. So,
they should love where they're working too.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's something that, you know, I think I've, you know, we have pretty good people that work for us over the years, but there's definitely a few situations where, you know, I could have done it, you know, a lot quicker and I should have. So.
Yeah. No, that's definitely a good lesson to mention for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Todd, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Awesome. It was a pleasure to learn about your journey and your story of starting EnvisionUp. So thank you so much for being my guest today.
Awesome. Thanks, Julie, for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast and we'll see you next time.